I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome back to the Chase Thomas podcast. Taping this on a beautiful Tuesday afternoon here in Knoxville, Tennessee. John Taylor, Fangraphs, is also here. John, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, not too bad. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Getting really accustomed to the new clear sounding John Taylor. I very much enjoy it. So
I wonder if people in your reviews have like noticed that too, if they're just like, wow, this just sounds different now.
Who is this new Fangraphs John Taylor? I remember Jonathan Taylor Thomas talks Major League Baseball, but I don't seem to recall this John Taylor of Fangraphs fellow.
Yeah, it's a whole new ball game.
It's a whole new ball game. Speaking of whole new ball games, John Taylor, a new world in the AL East. The Red Sox are in first. The New York Yankees, I believe, are 5-10. Garrett
last
Cole,
place.
Yeah, last place, New York Yankees. For the Knicks to come back, the Yankees had to fall. It's an unfortunate dilemma for New York fans. But Garrett Cole has 39 Ks through four starts. He pitched over the week against the Rays. Cashman's already said they're not panicking yet. The weirdest part about all of this to me is that the Yankees bullpen is the only thing keeping them afloat, which is kind of weird because I don't think either of us would have predicted that to start this season. But yeah, what do you make of Cole's early season starts and the Yankees just being bad?
The Cole stuff doesn't surprise me. I mean, this is just who Garrett Cole is. And I picked him I think I had him as my preseason AL Cy Young pick. And so far, he's not making me look any bit foolish on that. That doesn't surprise me. Mm. The Yankees, that's a slightly different thing. I think there are two sides to it. One is that I think Cashman is right. Like, it is early, and though, you know, these games count just as much as games in September count, just as much as games in July count. You know, you don't want to be 5-10, and I'm sure no one in the Yankees organization wants to be 5-10. But there's some stuff in there that I think is just, you know, they're not hitting with runners in scoring position, and that's not generally something that's either predictive or something you can assume is going to continue forward. They have some injury issues that hopefully with better health will make that team stronger. As you said, the bullpen is working fine, and that's without Zach Britton. Once he comes back, that's a big boost there too. On the other hand, you know, you mentioned the health stuff. It's not as simple as just saying, oh, well, they're going to get healthy. This Yankees team has had a real problem staying healthy, and it's notable that it just seems to be like an epidemic, especially of just what seemed to be, or at least you would imagine to be, like preventable soft tissue stuff. I mean, obviously the Luke Voit stuff is a big issue and, you know, something they couldn't necessarily have seen coming. But I think more concerning for the Yankees have to be two separate things right now. One is the rotation beyond Gerrit Cole, which is really just not functional right now. Jordan Montgomery's looked all right, but Jameson Taillon and Corey Kluber have been pretty so-so. And beyond that, the fifth starter spot, depending on how you feel about Domingo Germán, who's been awful, or, you know, maybe at some point Davey Garcia gets up there. Regardless, they haven't gotten a lot of depth or length from that chunk of the rotation or a lot of success. And that ties into what I think is almost an even bigger problem for them. Defensively, this is not a good team. And this is something you could have seen coming, I think, at the start of the season, especially if you look at the infield. And obviously, Voit being out kind of screws things up a little bit because they, you know, they tried the Jay Bruce experiment and that didn't work. Now they've got LeMahieu playing first base. But I think the bigger problem there is you've got, and this is really big, Gleyber Torres is not a shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
He's just not good enough defensively to play there. It is just past obvious at this point that he is not capable of playing that position. And because you have LeMahieu playing first base, now you have to do stuff like have Rougned Odor play there. And this is kind of another thing where it's like, these are problems that the Yankees are trying to paper over with very cheap, very bad solutions. Like,
yeah,
Jay Bruce was not someone I think anyone would have realistically expected to do much of anything at this point in his career. And then he up and retires like 2 weeks into it. And Odor is just, I don't understand that move at all. There's nothing to Rougned Odor. The upside of Rougned Odor is 30 very cheap home runs and nothing else. He's a bad defender, a bad hitter, seems to be kind of a weird clubhouse guy given, you know, all his penchants for punching people. It just struck me as that being Cashman trying to find a solution at a dollar store, you know, which makes no sense to me. This is the Yankees. Why are they? I mean, I understand, like, you know, April, whatever it is, 20th right now. Hey, 420, blaze it. You're not going to get like a premier second baseman if you need one off the, you know, in a trade. That's just not going to happen. But you should be able to do better than Rougned Odor. I mean, the Yankees have Derek Dietrich floating around their alternate side, I believe. He's probably better. Anything is better than Rougned Odor. But regardless, I think, you know, if you're the Yankees, there's some elements where you're like, okay, things will change, things will get better, you know, this will improve. But I think if you're Brian Cashman, you got to be thinking, okay, there are two areas that really are probably going to need external reinforcement or improvement. One is a rotation, and one is a defense. Some way or another, we've got to figure that out. And I think until they do, it's really going to put kind of a ceiling on what this Yankees team can do. I think they're still going to be good. I mean, that offense is way too good to be this bad, if that makes any sense. And I do think things will improve as the season goes on, especially as they get guys back from injury. But there's some stuff going on there that is legitimately a problem for them. This is not just a fluky bad start. This is a sign that there are some issues that the Yankees need to figure out.
Yeah, I'm wondering when they'll actually start to get nervous, because the AL East is just kind of weird right now, because the Rays are playing 500 ball. You've got the Blue Jays playing 500 ball. I mean, Vlad Guerrero Jr. is in shape and mashing at an unreal rate velocity wise. Like, his home run the other night against the Royals, just like he is hitting with an insane amount of power. Is he number one in home run power right now?
He's way up there. But I think for the Yankees, like, yeah, you're already this Yankees team still projects as the best team in the American League East,
yeah,
and as the best team in the American League overall. The problem is when you get off to a 5-10 start like this, especially coupled with the Red Sox getting off to their start, your margin for error is basically gone now.
Yeah.
Looking at the Fangraphs projections, it's the Yankees at 90 wins and 72 losses, the Red Sox at 88 wins and 74 losses. The Yankees have lost 20 points off their playoff odds in just 2 weeks. So from this point forward, this is the thing. These games do count insofar as the Yankees cannot afford another 5-10 stretch or something worse going forward. They got to play better than this, because they've pretty much wiped out whatever cushion they would have had. Because like you said, like the rest of the AL East, especially the Blue Jays and the Rays, they haven't taken advantage of it, but you know they're probably going to get better too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this isn't something where the Yankees are lucky, I guess, in that sense that they're going 5-10 when the rest of the East, with the exception of the Red Sox, isn't doing particularly well. But it does pretty much wipe out whatever.
But like they're not flaming out either. They're playing 500 ball. They're staying afloat.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you're not – they're treading water while the Yankees are just struggling to keep their head above it. And
I don't think their head's above it. I think it's below right now. It's below it. Well,
it's trying to get their heads even just above – like, just gasping for air above it.
I feel like – who was it? Lester Freeman, when he was talking to McNulty in The Wire, and he's like, the job will not save you. I want to say Aroldis Chapman's splitter will not save you, Yankees fans.
It's a very good splitter, though, which is crazy. He just started basically throwing it this year, and it's completely unhittable. It's absolutely wild.
It'd be nice if he was a likable person to root for, because it's a crazy thing. The Dodgers are still rolling. I think they're 13-4 as of this recording. They're off to the best start since they moved to Los Angeles. How stunned are you about the Dodgers winning 13 of their first 17 games?
Absolutely not. I thought this was the best team in baseball coming into the year, and there's nothing that suggested to me otherwise. Like, you look at this team. I think the easiest way to make it clear how good the Dodgers are is Zach McKinstry. Mm. This dude was like a 36th round draft pick or whatever. Total nobody coming up through the minors. Gets a roster spot in part because the Dodgers let a guy like Kike Hernandez walk, and they need a new Kike Hernandez, a guy who can, you know, play multiple positions, be this kind of utility guy off the bench. And McKinstry is not only doing that, but excelling at it. This team just not only does this team find guys like this and develop guys like this and just create players like this, they literally just create them out of thin air.
Yeah.
This kind of depth is something no other team in baseball has. And I think you saw it in that Padres series when they took 2 out of 3, and realistically it could have been a sweep if not for a late San Diego comeback in the third game. You have to wear this team down. Mm-hmm. And it is so hard to do it because they just have more pieces than you everywhere.
And they have a Mookie Betts diving catch to anchor.
Yeah, and that's and like obviously some of this calculus changes if Mookie Betts he got hit by a pitch on Monday night in a what looked like a very, very painful hit by pitch to the arm. Obviously this calculus changes if Betts is out for an extended period of time, particularly now that they're down Cody Bellinger for an indefinite mm-hmm. period of time. But that's the thing about the Dodgers. They have so much depth that even if they lose two MVP players, literally two MVPs, they're still the best team in the National League because they have this depth everywhere. And the thing is, even if they do lose pieces, you know that because of the farm system they have and because of the financial flexibility they have, and the Dodgers are true financial flexibility. Financial flexibility just means you have money. Because of the finances they have, they can go out at the deadline and make an impact acquisition if they need to. You know, it's like this is a team where you're not necessarily going to beat them so much as I think they're going to beat themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, so them getting off to the start they're off to doesn't surprise me. Like I said, I thought this was the best team in the National League. I think they're going to repeat as World Series champions. And, because the team you saw this is better than the team you saw last year. And the team you saw last year was on pace to win like 115 games. So none of this surprised me at all. The only real issue here is going to be injuries. And so you just got to hope that Mookie's okay and that Bellinger's back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, they did a better job with McKinstry than the Braves have done with Sean Kazmir Jr. Sean Kazmir Jr. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be an everyday player for the Braves.
Kazmir's a nice story, though. Dude came into the baseball, 14 years ago?
Yeah, he's a good
Absolutely
story.
Absolutely insane.
Gwinnett Stripers legend, Sean Kazmir. Let's just talk about your team, the Red Sox.
Let's do it.
They sport one of the best bullpen ERAs in baseball right now. I was looking at just their lineups and going through some box score stuff with them and just looking about it. Who's okay? That's interesting. Okay. JD Martinez numbers are just like when you pull up his numbers on Fangraphs, like your laptop literally lights on fire. Like it
bursts into flames. Yes.
Yeah. It just bursts into flames. Verdugo, who you were kind of out on, you look at this outfield and you kind of look at what Vasquez is doing at catcher and, Dahlbeck batting at the end of the blood. Like Bogaerts, I think, is like tied or leads the AL in hits, I want to say. Is that right? Is Bogaerts? Because I'm pretty sure Bogaerts is right there.
He's up there.
Devers is hitting. Like, you look up and down this group and you look at just the utility guys, like Gonzalez and everybody, where they could just play everywhere at Dahlbeck, and they're super thin. The bullpen, we had some questions about the season. You look at the rotation. I just, Evaldi's like 3-1 and he was good, I think it was last night, but like, I don't understand it, but it's really like a grit and grind committee approach offensively for the Red Sox, but also just the bullpen's just dominating. I don't understand it. I really don't understand the Red Sox.
Yeah, you and me both. I think what's important here is something I feel like I've talked about before, but I'll say it again. I think the most important thing for this Red Sox team, or at least the biggest difference between this Red Sox team and last year's Red Sox team, beyond this team actually being good, is that the floor is just that much higher. Last year, Martin Perez was probably like the number two starter in the rotation. Now he's fifth, and that's exactly where Martin Perez belongs. He has an ERA near 6 and an ERA plus of 73. That's bad, but you can survive that when you have other pitchers in front of him who are better. Nate Eovaldi has been great. Eduardo Rodriguez looks like he's come back very strong. Nick Pivetta, I don't trust, but the results have been good so far. Tanner Houck has been awesome whenever he's been called upon and is available down there in case, you know, someone like Perez or Pivetta or Garrett Richards gets hurt. Similarly with the bullpen, you just have more quality options now, even beyond like Matt Barnes and mostly beyond Matt Barnes, who I think was really the only good part of last year's bullpen, if that even counts. You know, you have Adam Ottavino and you have Matt Andrees, who's been surprisingly useful, and you have Garrett Whitlock, who was a fantastic Rule 5 pickup. You know, guys like Phillips Valdez and Josh Taylor, well, again, maybe not Josh Taylor, has been terrible, but guys like Phillips Valdez and I was going to say Austin Bryce, but he's also been terrible. Let's just stick with Valdez. Valdez, again, a guy who was way too high up in the leverage chain last year in terms of being asked to pitch in situations he clearly just wasn't good enough to pitch in. Now he's a guy who comes in when you're two runs down or four runs up or whatever it is. That's much better. Again, the floor is so much higher because you have guys like Kike Hernandez and Marwin Gonzalez and Hunter Renfro when he starts hitting better, who are just better than what they were trying to throw out last year. There's still some issues here, I think. I think defensively, this is not a good team pretty much anywhere, except for, I think, Vasquez, and the outfield's okay for the most part. Renfro's actually surprisingly a good defensive outfielder, despite the fact he looks like he's made out of concrete. But defensively, there's a bit of a problem here. First base, you're kind of sinking or swimming with Bobby Dalbec right now, and right now it's sinking. Second base is... I mean, you can look at Christian Arroyo's 131 OPS plus and be happy about that, or you can look at the fact he has one walk and 40 plate appearances and be kind of worried. You know, I think there are some holes here, and I think ultimately this team ends up a little closer into the 82 to 86 win territory than the, what are they at now on pace for their, I'm just going to do this math real quick. They are on pace to win 104 games. That's not going to happen. But I think this is clearly a team that, if nothing else, assuming health holds and assuming that, you know, that these performances aren't completely just out of nowhere. And I think you look at the underlying metrics too. A lot of these guys, it really does seem like this is, I mean, that's the thing. You can count on Bogarts and Devers and Martinez and Verdugo and Vasquez. Like, these are established good hitters. I think at this point you can safely say this Red Sox team, barring some really weird collapse, is probably headed for at least 500 and at least part of the AL wildcard playoff conversation, which right now includes the Red Sox, the Mariners, and the Royals, which is just all kinds of silly. What am I saying? The Royals are in first place in the division, aren't they? I think the first place teams in the American League right now are the Red Sox, the Royals, and the Mariners.
Yes.
Who the hell saw that coming?
Well, I think we can go ahead and just cancel the rest of the season. I think this is clear. These are the three best teams.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's go ahead and wrap it up.
Yeah, that Mariners Royals ALCS is going to be absolutely wacky. Let's get excited for that.
But the Royals, you know, have actually been a pretty good story. Whit Merrifield's been good. Solar's not hitting yet. It's weird that Carlos Santana is just in the two hole for them. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think especially with just looking at the standings reminded me of this too. When you look at those three first place teams, what makes the Red Sox feel especially kind of believable to me is that they have the best run differential in the American League right now. And the second best run differential in baseball behind only the Dodgers. You don't luck your way into a plus 28 run differential. Not to mention they are the leading scoring team in all of baseball with 96 runs right now.
Did you see the MLB.com stat on the Royals?
I did not know.
Okay. It's pretty bonkers. It's the Royals have not lost a game when they were winning after seven innings since like June 2019.
I can believe that. It's a surprisingly solid bullpen.
Yeah.
All things. I think that's if you got one thing that all three of these teams have in common, it's their bullpens are surprisingly solid. Like the Red Sox really have yet. I think they might have one loss right now with a lead after seven or something. Seattle's bullpen has been pretty good. Rafael Montero notwithstanding, Kansas City's bullpen has been good. I just think the thing you run into with both those teams as opposed to Boston is the pieces there aren't as good. And for Kansas City, that offense just is not very strong. And for Seattle, the pitching is not very good. So I think that's kind of the issue for those teams there. But that's a different conversation.
Speaking of good pitching, though, the Milwaukee Brewers, really good. They have an MLB best 2.07 ERA. Did you have this point in the season with the Brewers?
Not necessarily that low, but I think looking at what they've done, the combination of Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns, I don't think you could have seen like Corbin Burns has an ERA plus of almost 900 and hasn't walked a guy in like four starts. I don't think anyone definitely saw that part coming. But you could have seen, at least with Burns coming, the fact he's leaning more on his cutter. It's been a very good pitch. It's both helping him with strikeout and ground ball numbers. Woodruff obviously has been good the last 2 years, so that's not a surprise that he's good this year. Freddy Peralta has always had the stuff. It's just been a matter of harnessing it. So far, so good on that. Again, I think it's something similar to the Red Sox, where instead of asking, in Milwaukee's case, Brett Anderson to kind of carry the load, now he's your number four or number five starter, and you can live with that a lot more easily than when your rotation is Brandon Woodruff and a whole bunch of question marks like it was last year, it felt like. So I'm not surprised by that. I think the thing with Milwaukee is...
their offense sucks.
I mean, yeah, it's not been great, and Christian Yelich being hurt doesn't help, and Lorenzo Cain being hurt doesn't... It just feels like everyone there is hurt. Colton Wong is hurt as well.
Jackie Bradley Jr. Is getting the most amount of at-bats.
Yeah, I love JBJ more than life itself, but you don't want to be in a situation where he's the guy who's getting the most plate appearances. That's just not ideal. But I think this Brewers team, the way it's built, though, especially it's a defensively it's a good team. Pitching staff is good. The bullpen, even though Devin Williams has been very bad lately, Josh Hader's been awesome. You know, Brent Suter's been a very good bullpen piece, which didn't really see coming. I think this team is kind of built to win more in that pitching and defense mindset of let's just kind of grind out some low scoring wins. You know, we'll have Yelich kind of do the heavy lifting. We'll have, you know, ideally Lorenzo Cain will chip in, you know, get a bounce back season out of Travis Shaw. Maybe Avisaíl García is finally making kind of a full leap. The big thing I think missing for them right now is that Kesson Hira just looks lost. I mean, 20 strikeouts and 56 plate appearances, that's just not going to cut it. To the point where I do wonder if maybe he just needs to go down to the alternate site and just kind of work on some things for a little bit, because you can't keep running a guy out there striking out in almost half his plate appearances. The problem right now, obviously, for the Brewers is, you know, if you do that, okay, now you're starting Daniel Robertson every day, or you're starting Dan Vogelbach every day, or you're starting, you know, Jace Peterson every day, and that's not really going to fly. And I think more than anything, that's probably the issue with the Brewers. It's not just that they're not hitting. There's not really any depth there that... You know, this team needs its stars healthy. It needs its key pieces healthy, because they don't really have that Dodgers-like depth to fill in for that. You know, you don't want to be in a situation where Tyrone Taylor and Billy McKinney are taking regular at-bats.
Yeah, I'm not a Brewers believer. I think they're going to fade.
No, I don't think this is better than a 500 team, honestly, ultimately. I think but I do
worse.
Think that there is...
Because I think the NL Central is a little bit better than I thought it was going to be. And I think that kind of falls off a little bit.
It's not total trash. It's not great, but it's not total trash. Except for the Cubs, who are complete trash.
Well, hold on. The Cubs also just, like, fucking blew us out on... the Cubs are a really annoying team. Like, the Cubs, that whole series was just dumb. What a dumb series.
It was. The Cubs have only scored 51 runs.
Yeah. Which is kind of crazy when you look at this lineup. Like, the lineup should not be this bad. When I was looking up and down,
but at a certain point, you kind of have to feel like, okay, whatever's going on with Javi Baez is not just like this is a slump. It's like, no, this is a real problem where he just his particular style of hitting, which is I will swing at everything, you know, results be damned, just doesn't work. Like, there needs to be some significant retooling of what's going on there. Because that's the thing, you look at the Cubs lineup, beyond Wilson Contreras, Anthony Rizzo, and Chris Bryant, who do you feel comfortable with? Who is there who you're thinking, oh, they're going to turn it around and be better? Maybe Ian Happ.
I was going to say Ian Happ fits the bill there.
But otherwise, like, David Bodie is a backup. Jason Hayward is just very clearly never going to be a good hitter again. Jock Peterson probably is not supposed to be a full-time hitter, although I do wonder if there's something going on similar to with the deal with Kike Hernandez, is these are two guys who went from being part-time players for the most part in warm weather climates to full-time players in the freezing cold. And if it's just going to take them a little bit of time to kind of get into not just that rhythm, but also adjust to, hey, it's 45 degrees outside as opposed to it's 72 every day, you know?
Yeah.
But even beyond that, like, there's a whole huge chunk of this lineup you do not expect to be hitting. And pitching-wise, yeah, Kyle Hendricks should be better. Zach Davies should be not this bad. But what else are you counting on there? This is kind of the thing with the Cubs, is like you very quickly run out of guys you feel comfortable with and that you can trust. And I think ultimately this is going to end up being, I don't think this team has anything close to being a playoff contender. I think more like than not, you're going to see them moving Kimbrel and maybe even Rizzo at the deadline, especially because with Rizzo, they just spat on him and said, no, we don't really want you back. So it really is kind of shameful the way the Cubs have done all this.
Not shameful, though. It's time for the John Means Power Hour. John Taylor.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Why not? The Orioles need the Orioles need an AL All-Star, and John Means is right there. So
I mean, he was an All-Star in what, 2019?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, there's, oh, there's, you know, that, remember that show Designated Survivor with Kiefer Sutherland as the, well, the whole idea of. Is that, like, in the event of, like, the president being killed or whatever, yeah. or there's someone designated to assume the role of the presidency, right. you know, as very, like, it just keeps going down and down the chain.
Mm-hmm.
John Means is the designated all-star. Like, he is just the guy where it's like when they're looking to fill out the AL roster, it's like, oh, shit, we don't have an Oriole. John Means, fine. And, like, he would entirely deserve it. I think I don't know, he's got
a 1.52 ERA, 0.93 whip. 23 Ks over
23 innings. Yeah, he's been very good, and I think I pointed this out, or we talked about it when we did our Orioles kind of 2020 review, 2021 preview. He was unlucky last year insofar as he had some injuries to deal with. His velocity was a little down. It felt to me, it's like if he just gets the velocity back up and is just healthy, he's going to be back to being that kind of all-star caliber pitcher he was back in 2019. And so far, he's showing it. So it doesn't surprise me at all to see him doing what he's doing. It was just a matter of okay, let's get that velocity back up. Let's get healthy again, and we should be all good on that capacity. And so far, so good. So congrats to John Means, who is, again, just making the easy case for when they have to pick an all-star for the Orioles, that he's just right there, just got his hand up, be like, yep, pick me, I'm right here.
And congratulations to the Seattle Mariners, the first-place Mariners. Can't ever see it falling apart. The Mariners are 11-6. Nature is healing. The Mariners are off to a great start. Kyle Lewis just got activated. John, how much stock are you buying from America's Seattle Mariners?
I'm selling it all. This is not a good team. Yeah, this is not a good team. Like, you look at the numbers, it's not. This is, I'm sorry. I am sorry to Mariners fans. I know more than I want them to be happy, probably more than any fan base, because they have had so little to be happy about in the last two decades beyond Ichiro.
Oh, well, I'll give them something Felix. They can do. Listen to The Kid, Season 2, American Prodigy on Blue Wire. Great podcast about it. That will cheer you up.
Very solid plug there. Mm. But you look at the Mariners, one, their pitching staff is just not good. You know, their starting rotation is just flat out bad. Marco Gonzalez should be better than he is, but otherwise you're not really expecting a whole lot better out of what you got there. Second, their lineup is just, aside from right now Mitch Haniger and Ty France, there's not really a whole lot working. And I guess Jose Marmolejos, but again, Kyle Seager is league average at best. J.P. Crawford is, J.P. Crawford, Dylan Moore, Evan White, they're not hitting. And you can't really expect them necessarily to start hitting all that much better. White is a guy who's not really shown tremendous offensive ability quite yet. Moore had a big season last year, but it looked kind of suspect. And he's back down to a OPS plus of 38. Is that going to hold all season? No, he'll be better than that. But, I mean, look, this team, they're getting Kyle Lewis back, like you said. They're going to call Jared Kelenic up, you know, once the Super 2 deadline coincidentally passes or whatever deadline it is they're waiting for. Taylor Trammell, you know, ideally will get better with more playing time. But, you know, I think the thing that sticks out to me is not just the fact that they have a negative run differential right now, but you know, by Pythagorean win-loss record, they should be 8-9. And I think ultimately that's probably what this team is something in that kind of 78 to 82 win window, because there just isn't enough depth or star stuff here. There aren't enough star players, and there isn't enough depth, I think, for this to continue. They're on a hot streak right now. If nothing else, this is a tenacious team. You've seen it with all the comebacks. They're very clearly, to use every white dad's favorite term, they're scrappy. They play hard, but eventually, like, talent does tend to win out. And I think the other problem that the Mariners face is that, you know, they have three other good teams in that division, in the Angels, the A's, and the Astros, who are all kind of a little bit scuffling right now, but are better than what they've been, especially Houston. I just don't see this. Obviously, the Mariners are not going to be like the Red Sox. They're not on pace to win 104 games, or they're not going to win 104 games. But, you know, if nothing else, they're at least giving their fans something to be thankful for before Jerry DePoto trades it all away.
He's got to be getting antsy. He's just making calls.
Yeah, he's like, I need a new eighth reliever. somebody just give me a back of the bullpen reliever.
Yeah. But, you know. Enjoy it while you can, Seattle fans.
Exactly. I just don't see it lasting, because I don't see the pitching or the offense being able to keep up that kind of pace. Especially because the pitching already isn't keeping up that kind of pace. So,
Jay Bruce, we mentioned at the top of the show, retired.
Happy trails.
Pour one out for Jay Bruce. Do you have a Jay Bruce story or memory that is going to stay with you forever, John?
Nah.
You know what I'll say about Jay Bruce, though? That kind of name, there was zero chance he wasn't going to be a big, powerful batter in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, you look at Jay Bruce and you're like, yeah, you're a Jay Bruce.
Like, he is an absolute Jay Bruce.
You look like a Jay Bruce.
Like, that dude has been that big since he was, like, 5 years old.
Yeah, since I wasn't a Reds fan, and I didn't watch a whole lot of Reds baseball when he was on the Reds, because he spent the great majority of his career in Cincinnati. And then the kind of sad thing for Bruce is once he left Cincinnati, things kind of just sputtered out. You know, he never really had any big or good moments. Not never, but, like, they were pretty limited down the stretch. Obviously, the three-time All-Star in Cincinnati was a big part of those good teams in the early 2010s. Definitely not a guy, obviously, that's going to get any sort of Hall of Fame consideration. He'll be one and done on his lone ballot 5 years from now. It's funny, he was a 20 WAR player over the course of his career. I just went ahead and looked up guys worth 20, anywhere between 15 and 20 WAR with 6,500 or more plate appearances, which is, he finished with 6,642. It's funny, 20 WAR for Jay Bruce, right behind him, Jeremy Burnett's at 19.9, and virtually the same amount of plate appearances with a very similar slash line. And that kind of makes sense.
I have not heard that name in so long. Holy shit.
Jay Bruce is going to be a guy we remember, but I think Jeremy Burnett feels like a semi-appropriate comp, and a guy a good amount of power. You know, Burnett was a better OBP guy than I think people remember, but kind of defensively not super great. And you see a lot of other guys, like, again, in between that 15 to 20 span, you have Jeff Conine, you have Vinny Castilla, you have Todd Zeal, Pat Burrell. Adam Dunn, I think, makes a lot of sense. Obviously, Adam Dunn was a much better hitter overall than Jay Bruce was, but he gave a lot of it back defensively. And I think that's similar to Bruce. He was just never really a great defender, average at best. But still, I mean, 6,600 plate appearances, 319 career home runs. Like, no, we're never going to see Jay Bruce in the Hall of Fame, but he had a very solid career. And if nothing else, I'm sure Reds fans have fond memories of him. And, you know, when his time comes, he'll definitely get himself into whatever the Reds Ring of Honor or whatever is, their particular own team Hall of Fame, because he was a very good player for them for quite a good period of time.
The 10-6 San Francisco Giants. Did you see the fan falling, busting his ass?
Yeah, it was Zach Hample.
Was it really?
It was Zach Hample.
I didn't know that.
It was a dude who's caught like 20,000 home runs on his ass trying to get 20,001. That dude is so embarrassing on so many levels. I think my favorite, though, was someone on Twitter edited the video to include the music from Sonic.
Mm-hmm.
And when Hample fell down, all the little rings came out with the ring falling out noise. But yeah, that was Zach Hample.
Yikes. That was great. Great.
Big yikes, as the kids say.
What can we say about Shohei Ohtani that we have not already said? Like, him and Trout now have over 1,000 OPS through 17 games. Ohtani is now an elite base runner, which is insane. Like,
sure.
What?
Yeah.
Did you
Why
see
not?
That anonymous quote from the Angels front office that was like, yeah, if we wanted to put him in center field, he'd be a gold glove center fielder. Like,
probably.
This dude just does whatever.
He can very clearly do anything. He can very, very clearly do anything. But I think my thing with Ohtani is, like we said before, the issue is how long can he keep the two-way thing up? He's going to pitch, I believe, today or tomorrow. I can't remember which. You know, the big thing right now has been the blister, and blisters, you know, as any person who's followed Rich Hill's career, for example, can tell you, are kind of a chronic thing sometimes. I think eventually, like, and we've talked about it, the Angels are going to have to make that decision of, you know, do we let him keep pitching if all it's doing is just getting him hurt? But yeah, I mean, I'm sure he could do whatever he wanted. I'm sure he could play any position on the diamond except maybe catcher and like just be fine at it. But that's the thing. Like I do wonder if eventually they just say we're gonna make him a full time outfielder because you know he didn't play that much outfield in Japan toward the end of his career there because he was focused on the pitching and they figured DH was the easiest way to make sure he you know stayed healthy. But eventually, I do think if the pitching stuff, if the two way stuff does end, I do think the Angels are just going to say, all right, we're just going to put you in the outfield then, especially as Trout ages and is going to need to be moved off to a corner. I think maybe you do get to a point where it's like, okay, we're going to try Ohtani in center field and see what happens. Although the Angels do also have a good number of outfielders in Brandon Marsh and Joe Adele and other guys down in their system. So they're flush at that particular position, but you know,
well, they're potentially flush, we should say.
Yeah, well, they're potentially flush, of course, but like, I do wonder if that's something where instead of just saying, like, okay, he's a full-time DH because that's kind of a waste of his abilities, it's like, no, we're going to give him a shot in the outfield and see what happens. But obviously that depends on, you know, how he responds to being a pitcher. And I hope he can make it work, but, you know, we shall see.
I need Anibal Sanchez to be back in a Braves uniform.
Do you really?
Yeah, for sure. That dude, I'm a big Anibal Sanchez guy. Always been one. Three teams showing interest in him this week. I don't know if you've seen the Braves rotation, John.
It's not great.
It's bad, and it's getting worse by the day.
Yeah, the whole losing, like, Mike Soroka is not going to be back. He's not going to be back anytime soon, is he?
No.
It's not great. That's not what you want.
Freed, dealing with some stuff. Acuna getting hurt. Mild strain there. Yeah, no, it's just, this is turning into, like, kind of the season from hell. Like, have you seen the outfield that the Braves are going to probably trot out tonight?
Ozuna, Heredia, Ihira, Drianza? Who
that's what I'm saying!
Even is the third outfielder at this point.
It might be Austin Riley and Wright.
Oh boy, that's not what you want. Yeah, I'm just looking at this Braves lineup. Boy, is nobody hitting aside from Acuna and Freeman.
Acuna is literally doing. He is the sportsman of the year for carrying this group. Like, it's unreal.
I had not realized how, but no one on this team is hitting.
No one.
Jeez, this is grim. The Braves are in some trouble right now.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Lucky for them is no one in the NL East seems to be doing anything good, and it's pretty clear at this point that the Nationals are a bad team, so I don't think you really need to worry about them.
I don't think it's clear. Like, they had a lot of COVID stuff.
But there's also not a lot of... It's the same issue, I think, with other teams. There's just not a lot of depth, and if Strasburg's injury is, like, long-term, if it's not just, oh, he's going to miss a start or two just to get a shoulder right, that's a real problem, because... anyone knows what's wrong there, but you can't just have a rotation that's just Max Scherzer and a whole lot of shrugging. Like, that's just not gonna work.
But I also think Lerner family is more likely to do some in-season stuff to rebuild this. Like, the Lerner family has been very clear, we're not about rebuilding. They have the worst farm system in baseball.
No, they're not about selling, which is,
yeah,
because this is gonna be the fascinating thing. If we get to the deadline, or if we get to July 1, the Nationals are very clearly out of it, or, you know, they're just not clicking. Does Max Scherzer go on the market? I don't think so either, but it will be fascinating to see. And I think you're right about some of the COVID stuff. Like, obviously, that throws the start of your season into a little bit of chaos. But, yeah, I mean, the pitching staff is a real problem. I guess that's a nice thing for Atlanta, is that, you know, no one's really off to a strong start in that division for whatever reason. Even the Mets, I know they're...
I think the Marlins are off to a strong start for the Marlins, if you look at it from the Marlins perspective. Because, like, Jazz Chisholm raking for Miami early is huge for them. Like, that, him being a win, it's big for them.
Yeah, and he's been very good. And I mean, he's one of those kind of all or nothing hitters where it's like there's not a lot of play patience, there's not a lot of super contact skills, but when he makes contact, it goes a long way. He is very strong, and on top of that, he's also very fast, and he's fun. Like, it's just the thing. It's like, more fun players. I will always stand for this. More fun players. But
did you see Acuna ask him to look at his hair?
Yeah, that was awesome. Like, please, like, more of this. Make sure, I tweet about it, like, protect both of these men at all costs. Like, this is exactly the kind of stuff baseball needs and should have. And I will say for Chisholm, like, he is drawing his walks right now. Still a lot of strikeouts, but the play patience has been there, at least relative to last year and relative to what he's done in the minors. I think, like I said, the only thing you really kind of, not the only thing, the thing you kind of think about is like, okay, can he keep that up? Like, can the contact rates keep up? Because again, there's a ton of power in his bat, which is crazy because he's a little dude. Or he's not a little dude, but he's not a big guy either. He's not some big burly, like, it's funny. He's like, he actually kind of reminds me in that sense of Ozzie Albies, this kind of, you know, not particularly big guy who's just got a ton of power.
Yeah.
You want Anibal Sanchez on the Braves.
Oh yeah. Like, that dude is immediately going to come in, pitch six innings, a couple Ks.
I bet he goes back to the Nationals just because they could desperately use the help.
Well, so can the Braves.
Yeah, but the Braves they'll get Freed back. Maybe they'll get Soroka back at some point. Ian Anderson will figure some stuff out. They're fine.
Okay.
They're not fine.
If you say they're fine, I'll take your word for it. I don't think they're fine, but
Fine, but I think they are better than this, and they should be better than this. The problem they're running into is the injuries are just going to make it that much harder because it just keeps. I do think there is something to, you know, not being able to field the same lineup, the same defense, the same rotation, like always having to adjust on the fly and fix things. I do think that does create problems where it's like no one can ever really get into a rhythm, no one can get comfortable, and that's
not being able to be a full time DH.
That just does have a real knock on effect, I think.
Yeah, it's just, this is a season from hell, and it's also just like the Braves. Like, and I was telling the Atlanta Sports guys on Friday, it's just that, like, there's no path to them getting to the Dodgers. Like, I don't think there's in
season anyone except for the Padres getting through the Dodgers.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, not even the Padres. Like, I don't think they can catch the Padres midseason. Like, I think this is just a very flawed group that got thinner than they were a year ago, and the guys that were having career years are not having career years this year. So I don't really see the path. I think they can get back to winning the NL East. I still think that's a possibility, but like, they're not contending. Like, this is not a group that can win a World Series or make it out of the NL. Like,
no, they just can't. Currently, no. They need better health, and they need the guys who actually, like, they need Albies and Ozuna to be Albies and Ozuna, not
Albies is scaring the shit out of me.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the issue last year obviously was the wrist injury that hampered him, and he looked better when he came back. But I think one thing I noted was, like, he certainly hit better, but the play patience really wasn't there, and it doesn't really seem like it's there this year either. That's got to be a big concern for Atlanta. Is, like, you know, yeah, you're strong, you've got great power, but like, you need to be a little bit more discerning at what you're swinging at, because right now it just seems like a lot of weak contact all over the place.
Last thing, we'll wrap up here today. There's a good piece on Bleed Cubby Blue about the extra guy on second needing to go away and the universal DH coming. Like, what do you make about it? Like, do you think that this has actually hurt the game this year? The lack of universal DH and the runner on second rule to start extras?
I don't know if the lack of the universal DH is necessarily hurt. I think it would be better for baseball. If it existed, I think that would be a positive, definitely, because it's more offense. Like, pitchers hitting is just not a thing we need anymore.
Well, it's just like they don't even do it in the minors. Like, there's no reason.
MLB just screwed this up because they thought they could hold it for leverage, only for the players association to go, we don't care about that enough to give you anything for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, now it's going to have to be a discussion during the next CBA.
But they've already decided that it's happening the next one. They were just like, we'll just run it back and we'll ride it out this year. What?
I think the extra... Maybe this is a hot take. I don't particularly care about the runner on second one way or the other.
I don't either. I have a very strong extra rule.
You know?
I have a strong extra rule in terms of overtime across all sports. It's extra. Making it where it ends faster and that you don't have a full, even 50-50 shot is how it should be. It's extra credit. Like, you are getting extra time. It should be like sudden death. It should make it more difficult, more high pressure, because you didn't win the allotted time. I'm okay with it. I like it. I like the, when you come right in there, you know you can't mess up. I like the immediate pressure that it puts on pitchers and defenses.
I mean, I do think there is that value of just that, you know, it is... Like, I wrote about this at Fangraphs last year, and I was kind of skeptical. I was like, is this really going to reduce the amount of time that's spent playing the game? Is this really going to reduce the amount of innings? It does seem like it's actually done that. So in that vein, it is useful. It just feels weird, though. In the same way that seven-inning doubleheaders feel weird, where it's just like, you always have to remind... Like, I have this constantly now with the doubleheader where I'm like, wait a minute, it's the seventh inning. Why is the closer... Right, seven-inning doubleheader. Same thing with the extra runner, with the runner on second. I'm like, wait, what is that guy? Right, extra innings. Like,
but you'll get used to that.
You'll get used to it, but it just doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel organic. It is just something that has very clearly just been stapled on by the directive of Major League Baseball. And I think there's an element of baseball, I think, where...
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings. A four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone's experienced the pain of dropped calls and internet outages, especially working remotely this last year. So here's the question. If you're the telco company, how do you help create better experiences for customers? Simple. ServiceNow digital workflows can help solve network problems faster and provide real-time status updates so customers aren't left in the dark. That's probably why ServiceNow workflows have helped telco companies see an increase in customer satisfaction. But proactive customer communication's only half the battle. With a single view of your back, middle, and front office operations, ServiceNow workflows also eliminate silos, keeping teams more in sync and more productive. With our scalable services, companies assure a better experience for both customers and employees on a single platform, the Now Platform. So how do you help provide a better network experience for customers? With ServiceNow for telecommunications to help streamline network operations. Whatever your business is facing, let's workflow it. ServiceNow.
things feel like they arise organically, insofar as they can arise organically in a game that is as, you know, structured and rule-bound as baseball is. But it's like a runner gets on base because he earns his way on base. Either he walks or he gets a hit or someone makes a mistake in the defensively. He doesn't just magically appear there for no reason. And I think that's kind of probably the hardest part to get used to, is not even so much what it does in terms of strategy, because so far it doesn't really seem like there's... I was worried when the runner on second thing became a rule that it was just going to lead to a bunch of bunting. Like, bunt the runner over to third and then hope for a sacrifice fly or a ground out to first base to score him or whatever. It hasn't been that, which I appreciate. But there is this weird kind of foreign element to it of just like, what is this guy doing there? Like, how did he get there? I particularly love that he's ruled to have reached on an error that nobody committed, which is just this great metaphysical brain puzzle. But like... I think for me, it's just the arbitrary, if not arbitrary is maybe not the right word, but just the kind of artificial nature of just plopping a guy at second, be like, okay, there's a guy at second base now, play on. It's like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. Like, that's just, why? Why is this happening? That, I think, is the part that is hardest to get used to. And I don't know. Like I said, I don't necessarily have the strongest feelings about it. Like, I prefer baseball just be baseball all the way through instead of baseball up until the 10th inning, and then it's suddenly a different form of baseball that never has really made much sense to me. But ultimately, in extra innings, things get weird anyway. You have pitchers hitting and position players pitching and guys playing out. Like, you saw with that Padres-Dodgers game. You had Jake Cronenworth pitching and Joe Musgrove playing left field. That's just what happens in extra innings. Extra innings is weird by default. So,
who was the Twins pitcher who was throwing, like, 40 miles an hour?
Williams Astudillo!
Yeah, that's right.
Big Williams. He was throwing 46 miles an hour. That was great. But yeah, that's the thing. Extra innings
what
is weird.
What do you think you would throw, John?
What do I think I would throw?
Yeah, if you had to throw your hardest from the mound, what do you think you would hit on the radar gun right now?
35?
35.
Like, maybe not even that. Like, I'm sure my motion and mechanics are absolute garbage, and I'm sure I would significantly injure myself. Like, there's no... I'm throwing one pitch, and immediately just, like, my arm is just dangling by my side. Like, I'm sure it would be... Like, I did, when the All-Star game came to New York back in 2008, they had the Fan Fest out at the Javits Center, which is near where I live. And I went there, and they had a one of those, like, oh, pitch to a major league hitter, a video of me, or whatever, mm-hmm. with an actual radar gun. And I remember I think I hit 40 on it. But that was, like winding up, like, as hard as I could, and I still barely hit 40 miles an hour. Like, okay. No, I get on a major – I don't even think I'd get it 60 feet. That's the other thing. Like, I'm 95% sure it's not going as far as it should, and it's going, like, 2 feet above the catcher, and it's going maximum, like – 40 miles an hour. It would just be the worst moment of my entire life.
See,
and also, I'm getting
I would throw heat. I think I'd actually register pretty nicely, but I think it would just be I would completely miss the catcher. Like, I think at this point,
not a chance. There's
like,
not a
I am not going anywhere near the catcher.
Not a chance in hell.
They're like, no, great pitch, but great velocity, but you literally hit 85-year-old grandma at first base. Like, what are you
That's
doing?
The thing. There's no part of pitching in terms of mechanics, motion, accuracy, velocity, like any of that that I am capable of doing correctly. Not a single part of it. It would be, I don't think it'll ever happen for a variety of reasons, but I hope I'm never asked to throw a first pitch. It would just be the ugliest thing in the entire world. It'd be some 50 Cent Carly Rae Jepsen shit. Anthony Fauci just winging it out there. Just that's how bad it would be. I'm not going to be like, you know, like when they dragged Dubby out there for whatever first pitch he did post 9/11, he just throws a fucking perfect strike. Like, no, that's not me. Like, I'm gonna hit someone like four rows behind home plate to like on the first base side.
Yeah. All right, John. Well, that's all I've got, my friend. Is there anything you'd like to plug as we wrap up here today?
No, just per usual, Fangraphs still doing our April membership drive. Come on over, sign up for a membership. Ad-free or otherwise, help us keep doing our thing. But no, we're just chilling. It is great to have baseball back, especially the further we get through April, the more normal things feel. And I really appreciate that return of normalcy that is. And not just having baseball back, but this is I've noticed the really, really big difference for me. Having crowds back, having people in the stands back. That just makes such a baseball is not a sport that should be played in front of no one.
Yeah.
You know, it's
also just like now that we've gotten it. Can you imagine it getting taken away? Like, that's what pro wrestling just did, where like WrestleMania was like full almost. And then you went back to the Thunderdome with all the fake fans and on their computers. And it's just like, oh,
it's just weird. No, it's like it is so nice to have fans back. You know, ideally you do it in a safe way, not in the way Texas is doing, where it's just like, yeah, 40,000 people, no masks, who cares? But yeah, I It's just so nice to have baseball back, and it's so nice to have normal baseball back, because that last year was just not normal. It just felt so weird.
I also just need
weird.
My Tennessee Vols to start falling off a little bit, because we're a top five college baseball team, John.
There you go.
Do you know how much tickets we're going for Florida, Tennessee 2 weeks ago? My parents were here. We're trying to go catch Tennessee, Florida.
It's like $100.
$300 for one ticket.
$300?
Dude, they're 30% capacity, and it's a hot ticket. This weekend with Vandy, I don't even want to know what Vandy was.
SEC built different, man.
It just means more down here, John.
It means more.
It just means more. All right, John. Thank you, as always, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.